Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my God, I just love that music. Oh my God, it just gets me going. Hey everybody, welcome to Applause Radio Show today. It's really a crazy special day, to be honest, right John? How are you today?
Yeah, certainly is. Groundhog Day and Super Bowl Sunday, wow.
Groundhog Super Bowl and 2-2-2020. Isn't that crazy? 0-2-0-2-2-0-2-0. Is that just insane? And, of course, another exciting and special thing today is we have with us Mr. Richard Skipper. I can't wait for you guys to meet him. I fell in love with him the first 15 seconds that we spoke, and I just can't wait for you guys to fall in love with him, too. Richard, how are you? Richard Skipper on the phone. Welcome to the show.
Well, it's so good to be here, and with an introduction like that, how could I not be in a good mood today?
Doesn't it just, oh my God, runs right through you, right?
Yes, and it's an amazing time. You know, everything's going on. There's a lot of change that's going on in the world right now. We all have to look at it with positive eyes. That's my idea of doing
things. Absolutely.
And instead of wallowing in the negativity that's going around. So let's celebrate each other.
Absolutely. Pun intended, but you have a new show out called Richard Skipper Celebrates, right? That's coming out soon, right?
Well, actually, I've been doing this series for a little over 2.5 years now.
But you have a show coming up, right? You have a show coming up.
Well, next Saturday in New York, I am doing a show that I've done a few times previously called The Magic of Believing. When I was 13 years old, true story, I was reading The Magic of Believing by Claude M. Bristol. The book is sitting here on my desk. And in the book, it says, set your mind on a goal like a homing pigeon and go after it with dogged determination.
Exactly.
And again, I'm 13 years old. It's August 5th, 1974. I don't know what possessed me, but at that moment, a light bulb went off over my head.
Mm.
And I closed the book, and I went in, and I said to my parents, 5 years from today, I'm going to New York.
Mm.
And both of my parents looked at me as if I was speaking in tongues.
And you were in this small hick farm town in Conway, South Carolina, with these big dreams, right?
You know, you and I can call it a hick town, but I don't want to offend anyone
in Conway. Oh, of course
not.
I didn't mean it in a negative term. I apologize.
No, I know, but it was a very small town in South Carolina. For your listeners out there, I hope that I've got friends from Conway listening in right now.
Yes.
But Conway is the gateway to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And as I say in my show, and we'll get back to that in a moment, but in the show, Conway is known for, at that time, it was big tobacco farms. And, of course, we live in a different era now, so that's not the number one resource anymore. At least I don't think it is. But it's also the gateway to Myrtle Beach, which is the golfing capital of the world.
Beautiful.
And in addition to the fact that I was born in Conway, South Carolina, also born in Conway, South Carolina, in the same hospital, Vanna White.
No kidding. Okay,
wow.
I thought you were going to say Carol Channing. That would have been like too ironic.
Well,
you know,
Carol Channing, as you know, is such an integral part of my life.
I know. I can't wait to get there. I know.
Our lives have intertwined, and, Carol Channing, she, you know, and I know you're going to bring this up.
Yes.
She was the very first performer to perform at the halftime show.
Wow.
In 1970, it was in New Orleans, and it was the Kansas City Chiefs, and they beat the Minnesota Vikings 23-7.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And Carol was performing. They did the halftime show.
Yeah, what
was
she sing? What did
she opened with When the Saints Go Marching In.
Oh, very nice. Thank
and it was a big celebration because it was New Orleans of New Orleans jazz.
Yep, yep.
And she went over so big. This was 1970 that she was asked back to come back 2 years later, and she did it a second time.
Wow. So by any chance, I mean, I'm totally off the wall. Do you know when they started performing Star Spangled Banner at the – oh, no, that's the start, not the halftime. I am not a football fan, sorry. No, I thought maybe Carol did the Star Spangled Banner, because that's what I thought she sang, but she actually did the halftime show.
She did the halftime show, yes.
Oh, wow, that's even bigger. Wow, unbelievable. So she headlined it, wow. So I want to get to, I know we're going to get to Carol and everything, but here you are, you're a young boy who truly, truly followed your dream, and you've just became an amazing everything. And it's amazing. I just share your story with us. I know, like you said, you left South Carolina, went to New York, and like, what happened for you there? I mean, I'm sure you've greeted with a lot of disdain, negativity. I mean, for what you wanted to do. I mean, tell us about that. Your beginnings.
Well,
what were you doing?
You had
$500 in New York. Wasn't going to go far. So what'd you do?
Well, I'm hoping that if any of your listeners are able to come see my show next Saturday, I'm performing at Green Room 42 at 12 noon. This is, again, for the American Popular Song Society. And we'll talk about that as we get to that point in the show. But when I first came to New York, like I said, I came with $500 in my pocket.
Yeah.
I had the dream. And there are a lot of details about that first day in New York City, but I was led to believe before I got to New York that I would have a place to stay and that I would have a job.
Oh, no.
And I came to New York, and it turned out that the place that I was promised that I would be able to stay was actually a sublet. So I was not allowed to stay there much. I was in that apartment all of 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I also found out that the job that I was promised didn't exist. So I had to go out and get a job, and the guy that I was staying with told me to get the village gate and to go through the village gate with a red marker and go through every – if you remember – not the village gate, the village voice.
If you remember
the village voice, there were all of these job opportunities. And I went through – literally, he said, circle everyone that says no experience necessary. Because I was right out of high school.
I was right
off the tobacco farm in South Carolina. It was as if I just fell off the turnip truck.
Exactly.
I did not know anyone. I had no life experiences. I had never been beyond the borders of Conway, South Carolina. I had been to North Carolina. That was it. I had never traveled. I did not know really what it meant to be out on my own. So I grabbed my red marker, and I went through the Village Voice, and I circled every place that said no experience necessary. Yeah. And the very first place I went to was 55 Water Street, down in the Wall Street area. They were looking for a messenger for $6 an hour. And I walked in, and I said, your ad says no experience necessary. I'm the most qualified person for that.
Wow.
And I got the job.
That was a good one.
$6 an hour.
Well, I'm sure your charisma got it for you, but I wish I had known you then. You could have stayed with me anytime. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I was such – I mean, when I even look at pictures of myself in that era, I was scared to death. I didn't know what I was doing.
Nice.
I mean, my dream and my desire to be in New York was bigger than me. It was bigger than anything I had ever done.
Right. When you choose this life, that life, you know, that is. Your dream is bigger than you. And, you know,
well, I always
scary.
Say that this does not, you do not choose this. It chooses you.
Right.
Again, anyone out there listening to this, it is a tough business. It is a loving business. It is a non-forgiving business. It is a tough business, and you've got to have the spine for it.
Good, good, good. I love it. Thank you for sharing that for the who are listening to us, you know, who have plans and aspirations, because it is not easy. It's a long, tough business. And if you're looking for money, that's not the way to go.
No.
You got to do it for love.
Hey, Richard, what did you come to New York as a singer or a musician? What was your skill that you came to New York
with? I came to New York to be an actor.
Okay.
You know, I'm a product of, this is 1979. I was 18 years old. I don't know how old either one of you are. As far as I'm concerned, we're all the same age.
Yeah.
But I was a product of 1960s and 1970s television. And I grew up on the television variety special, the television variety show. So for those, again, the listeners that are out there listening to this, at that time, the networks, there were only three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC.
Yep.
All three of those networks vied for the largest demographic that they could possibly get. And therefore, you know, they would go on the air around 6 or 7 in the morning, and they would sign off with the national anthem at 1 o'clock in the morning. And
yep.
then there would be the test pattern.
Yep.
And then, so what was happening on those television specials is they were vying for the largest demographic that they could possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, our families would sit down together to watch these shows.
Yeah.
And because of those variety specials, the performers and entertainers of my generation would share a television special or a stage with those entertainers from my parents' generation
mm-hmm.
and from my grandparents' generation.
Yep.
So I grew up knowing who Carol Channey is.
Yep.
I grew up knowing who George Burns was.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up knowing who Jimmy Durante was because
yep.
I saw them on our television screens.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the world that I wanted to be a part of. That was the
mm-hmm.
world that I aspire to. And as I say in my show, I came to New York expecting the world of Breakfast at Tiffany's, Barefoot in the Park, Sunday in the Park with, Sunday in New York. I arrive in New York, and what I find, again, this is 1979,
mm-hmm.
was the world of Taxi Driver, Midnight Cowboy, Cruising, Mean Streets, the Bronx
uh-huh.
of New, Indian
yeah.
of New York. It was a whole different world.
Right.
New York wasn't even what it is now.
Now, when you went there and you were having such a tough time, did you let your parents know that it was as bad as it wasn't as good as what you thought it was going to be, and you know you were scared? Did you let them know or no?
I never discussed how bad it was, but I will
right.
tell you this about my parents. Again, my father was one of 10 children.
Hmm.
My mom was the oldest of. Are you sitting down? 16.
Oh God.
Wow.
So I mean. These
Thank
are five
God,
families.
I am sitting down.
So I come from a huge, huge family. And so
yeah.
here all of a sudden is this young kid who says he's going to go to New York and go into show business. So my parents, not only did they never believe for an instant that I would do this,
right.
but my father said that I would be back within 3 weeks
wow.
if I lasted that long.
So there was no way. There was no way you were telling them that things were going bad.
No, and because of that, no matter how bad things got, I was never going to go back.
Right.
I was always going to go forward, and I'll
right.
tell you a very interesting story.
Mm.
In 1983-84, mm. I had a roommate. I was paying him cash on a monthly basis,
mm.
and I came home one day to find out that there was an eviction notice on the door.
Oh.
And we had 72 hours to be out of the apartment. Otherwise, my apartment would be padlocked and everything I had, which was very little at that time, would have been taken away from me.
Right.
And so I called the landlord. The landlord didn't know who I was. This guy was a deadbeat, unbeknownst to me. Never had been depositing the money, was just spending it frivolously. And I called my father and I said, I am in trouble.
Yeah.
And this was the only time that I ever did this. I said,
right.
I need you to help me out. And my father said, I will send you a one-way ticket to come home, but I will not send you cash otherwise.
Wow, wow.
And I said, well, then, and I will tell you something. And I know there are a lot of people out there who may think, what a tough thing to do. It was the greatest
thing
he did for me.
Yeah, it was good and bad. That's what I was going to say. It was a good thing.
There's
and
a
bad
wonderful
thing.
Book called Love, and it's by Leo Buscaglia. And I don't know if you remember Leo Buscaglia or the book, but in the book, Leo Buscaglia tells a story that when he was a young guy, he was in Paris, and he ran out of money. And he had enough money to send a telegram, which is what you did in those days, to his father. And he sent a telegram to his father, and he said one word, starving. And he sent the telegram, and his father sent the telegram back to him with one word, and that word was starve. Because he said it was the greatest, and he said too, it was the greatest gift that was ever given to him. Because once you have to go out and you have to do it on your own, you will find a way to make it happen.
Definitely. I mean, you're gonna be more persistent, even more so, and you want to succeed more so. You know, it's not a revenge thing. I have to now. You know, it's a need. You know.
And I've always, you know, I get up each day. I've got a mantra that I do every morning when I get up. There are two things that I say to the universe, to God, to whatever that higher power is, if you believe in that. And if you don't, it still works. And I say, I'm putting my blinders on, and I'm doing what I have to do today. I'm not thinking about what my next-door neighbor is doing. I'm not thinking what my best friend in his business is doing. I'm not thinking about who's succeeding in areas that I want to succeed in, or anything other than what can I do today to move myself forward instead of backwards or sideways.
That's
number one. And number two, that I always want to be 1% better than I was the day before.
Excellent. Nice. So in your show, Magic of Believing, is it all singing? Is it musical? Or are you acting as well? I mean, what is the story?
It's telling my story. It's mostly, you know, me sharing these stories about my first days in New York, about the wonderful I have been very, very blessed with the friends that I've had. There is a section in the show about Carol Channing. I've got a wonderful story about, believe it or not, Elizabeth Taylor and myself, and Liza Minnelli, people that I've met along the way. There are a few songs in the show. I'm actually rehearsing a new song that I'm debuting in the show on Saturday.
Now, these are Richard, I'm sorry, are these all originals?
My opening song, believe it or not, is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda and and John Kander. And then I'm going to close with a Jerry Herman song because we just lost Jerry Herman.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, I'm going to a memorial tomorrow celebrating his life and legacy. And then, you know, there are a couple of songs that are important to me in terms of how they played out in my life. The first song that I sang at an audition, for example, the first song that I sang publicly in New York, all of those are also part of the show.
What is the first song you auditioned with?
The very first show that I auditioned for was a Jerry Herman show. It was me when I was 13. And I went in and I sang A Lovely Night from Cinderella. Again, I grew up watching Cinderella on television. And it was on every year with Leslie Ann Warren and Stuart Damon. And then years later, I'm on stage interviewing Leslie Ann Warren when they restored the print of Cinderella. And we've become good friends. We've remained in touch with each other since then. And who would have thought that this little kid growing up in Conway, South Carolina, watching Cinderella once a year on television, would be friends with her? It's unbelievable.
Well, I wanted to ask you, actually, you mentioned Liza. Are you close with Liza? Do you know her?
I mean, our paths have crossed very few times over the years. I've never really been in a social situation with her. But I did do singing telegrams, and sang for Liza Minnelli and her, I cannot believe I'm even saying this, on her 40th birthday.
Oh, nice. But that's very nice.
Yes, it was nice. I had a great time.
So now the new show that we're doing, the Richard Skipper Celebrates. Now, is that a talk show or?
Well, the Richard Skipper Celebrates idea came about because I said this before we went on the air. There is so much negativity in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is attacking each other. When you think about the I feel sorry for our kids today. I truly do.
Me too.
Again, I grew up at a time where I watched situation comedies. They were called situation comedies because the comedy came out of the situation.
Yeah.
Every comedy show that's on television right now is about put-down humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's about knocking someone down. It's about saying something that's offensive to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it for a moment.
No, you're right.
Every reality-based show on television is based about one-upmanship.
Mm-hmm.
It's about someone being better than somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It started with Survivor.
Yeah.
Someone's going to get kicked off the island. There's only going to be one person that's going to be remaining on that island at the end of the show. You've got Project Runway, where your design is better than my design, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking shows, where people are ridiculed for their creations. It's every waking moment of our lives.
You're right.
So I wanted to create the antidote to that. I want my show to be a celebration. I believe in celebrating every day. You and I are new friends, Joanne.
Yes.
But you have seen my postings.
Yes.
The things that I post on social media I begin each day with posting with a list of famous birthdays and things that happened on that day, but positive things.
If I don't
have anything nice to say about something, I say nothing. And why is it in our culture with social media, with Facebook, Twitter, everything, everybody has a platform.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody feels that their voice is bigger and better and brighter than the previous person.
I have to agree beyond that.
Everybody has to weigh in. And everybody, and this idea of if you don't think the way I think, if you don't believe the way I believe, I'm going to unfriend you. I'm going to block you. I'm going to cut you out.
Nice.
Well, the fact of the matter is that you are on an isolated island by yourself, and you're surrounded by yes people, and you know that where that will get us.
Right, exactly. You're actually right. I try to do the same thing. I try to post mostly funny things, but once in a while I post a truth item, and I'm always attacked. But anyway, we'll go away from that. But you're absolutely right. Times have changed drastically, and I'm in the same realm and shadow as you. I grew up. I'm a product of TV myself, and I have to say everything I've learned from TV. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I'm not that smart, but I think I'm okay, and I learned it from TV. You know,
well, Madison Avenue. The whole idea of Madison Avenue is telling us how we should live and breathe.
I don't listen to that.
But it's true. I mean, that's the whole basis. They will tell us what the best soft drink is, what the best restaurant is, what the best designer is, and we're supposed to follow in that.
Right.
And you know, I heard an interview years ago, and they asked, and we're going way back. This is at least 20 years ago, and they asked this historian what he considered to be the downfall of humanity. And he said the coonskin cap. And he said, I'll explain to you what I mean by that.
Yes, please.
He said in the 1950s, when Davy Crockett hit the airwaves, every kid in America had to have a coonskin cap. And there were marketing campaigns and everything. And if you were that kid who did not come to school with a coonskin cap, you were made to feel that you were less than. And it's this idea of whatever the latest shiny bauble is, that we all have to have it.
Right.
And I really, you know what I love about life and people and everything is uniqueness. I love individual people. I love people who are, Carol Channing, of course, Carol Channing was her own person. She created that persona.
Right.
And, you know, and you say Carol Channing, and an image instantly pops in your head.
Right, but she, but that was her. It's not like
that
she
was
created
her.
Anything. It was her. And
that
and
was
people
her.
People love her. It was not anything fake or false. It was her. It wasn't a character. This was her.
And
know?
She didn't talk about her politics.
No.
She
no.
didn't talk about her personal life. Mm-hmm. Everything about Carol Channing was what happened on that stage.
Right.
And that's
right.
what audiences gravitated towards. And
right.
I would love to go back to that. I
yes,
love the
yes.
fact that, you know, the Hollywood, when you think of it, the Hollywood stars of the 30s through, I would say, even their early 70s,
mm-hmm.
there was an air of mystery about who these people were.
Right, right.
And the fact that now we're so interconnected.
Right.
And Judy Garland once said that she found that every time she was looking through the peephole at someone else, that somebody was looking back at her.
Mm.
And this idea that we are all in everyone's business 24/7. Now, one of the things that I've started doing, today was an exception because we were getting ready for your show,
mm-hmm.
and I was putting it out there that I wanted to remind my friends and family and fellow artists that I would be doing this with you today.
Right.
I have started disconnecting on Sundays completely.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, Richard, I'm so sorry. I forgot.
No,
that.
No, I'm thrilled to be here with you today.
I know, but I forgot that was your not resolution, but oh, I'm so sorry.
No,
but,
it's, no, nothing to apologize for. It's great.
But since we're stopping on that note about technology and people and you're reaching out, if anybody wants to call and speak to Richard, please give us a call at 646-478-0999. And we want to thank Richard for joining us, of course, and, of course, our sponsors, the Hyde Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey. I'm sure they're having a kick-ass Super Bowl party today. Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, and KJBB Wines. Richard, back to you, my friend.
Yes.
So, now, okay, so let's get to Carol Channing. How did that all come about? I mean, you are known as one of the number one Carol Channing. I know you don't like the word impersonator. I don't either. But how did that all come about, and how did you become friends with her? Obviously,
well,
I will begin
by letting everybody know that that is all – it's part of who I am, but it's a part of my past. I haven't performed as Carol.
No, I know, yes.
It's hard to believe, but 9 years was the last time that I appeared on stage as Carol.
Right, but we should mention it. I need to mention it.
Well, I will start at the beginning. Yeah. My first introduction to Carol Channing was on the Lucy Show.
Mm-hmm.
There's an episode with Lucille Ball and Ann Southern.
Mm.
And Lucille Ball is, they think there's a spy ring going on. So
oh, I remember that episode. Yep.
So she's trying to get on an army base. So, and Carol Channing is performing that night. So Lucille Ball comes to the army base as Carol Channing to sneak her way onto the army base. It was a bizarre, absurd episode.
I remember.
But I was one of those kids that imitated everything I saw on television. And so I started doing my impression of Lucille Ball doing Carol Channing, not realizing that Carol Channing was a real live person.
Right.
Again, I'm living in Conway, South Carolina under a rock. I didn't know.
Right.
So, but then I started seeing her on TV specials. She did a few specials of her own. The first special that I remember seeing was her and Pearl Bailey doing a special together. And then I would go through the TV guide, and I would look for those opportunities when she was going to be on TV.
Yeah.
If she was going to be on a talk show, or if she was going to be on The Love Boat, or if she was going to be on The Muppets, or just making an appearance on any TV show at the time. And I grew up just loving her. I used to perform on the front steps of my high school, and I would mimic all these things that I had seen on television.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol Channing was one of those, not in costume, mind you, just doing the voice. And I would get on the front steps, and I would do this. And then when I came to New York, I discovered a place called the Piano Bar. It was at 67th and Broadway, and every Thursday night was their Broadway night. And I would go in, and I would get up, and I would perform, again, as Richard Skipper. I would get up and perform, and there was a free buffet if you were performing, which was great for a starving actor in New York.
Exactly.
And I would go every Thursday night. And after doing this for several months, I had some friends that were visiting from South Carolina, and we all go to the piano bar one night. Mm. I get up, I sing, and when I finish the song, one of my friends yelled out, why don't you do Carol Channing? And, of course, I got a big laugh, and everyone says, oh, you do Carol Channing. And I said, no, I don't do Carol Channing. Mm. And they said, yes, he does. He used to perform on the front steps of a high school and everything.
Right, right.
They got me up to perform Hello, Dolly as Carol. I finished the song, and the place went crazy. And there was a woman there, Leola Harlow, and she came running over to me, and she said, what is your drag name?
Mm.
I didn't even know what that meant.
Right.
I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, obviously you do this.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I don't. And she says, well, if you ever decide that you want to dress as Carol Channing, I want to costume you.
Mm.
So, but there was no, I had no desire to do that, no dream of doing that. And I'm auditioning for a show several months later, and I walk in, and the moment I walked in the door, the guy said, oh, you're the Carol Channing guy.
Ah.
And my heart stopped, and I thought, well, there's no way they're going to cast me. Well, they were looking for an impersonator for the show, and they asked me to get up and do the title song of the show as Carol Channing, which I did, and I got the part. And
wow.
I opened in the show. I mean, I called this woman back. She costumed me. She got me the costume. She got everything. I opened in the show. I came out as Carol Channing. I was all of 20 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I come out. I perform the song, and I brought the house down.
Mm-hmm.
But after the show that night, the producer and the director come into my dressing room, and they say, you exceeded our expectations, but we're cutting the song from the show.
Oh.
Because the show was not about me.
Right.
And the fact that I was doing this was taking away from what they wanted the show to be about.
Right.
But I had a costume now. So
right.
Every year on Halloween, I would go out dressed as Carol Channing, and I would get up and perform in all the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Only on Halloween.
Right,
and
right.
I did that for several years.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's back up for just a moment. How
mm-hmm.
I met Carol Channing. The
mm-hmm.
first time that I saw Carol Channing live in person was Lynn Fontanne had passed away,
mm-hmm.
of Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a memorial, and interestingly enough, tomorrow, the memorial that I'm going to for Jerry Herman is at the Lynn Fontanne Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first place that I saw Carol Channing.
Wow.
Live and in person.
Mm-hmm.
And I am standing in front of the theater, and Carol Channing and Helen Hayes and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. walk out of the
wow.
theater together.
Wow.
And I'm standing so close to her, and I hear her say in her inimitable voice,
go ahead,
I have a table over at Sardi's. Why don't you come and join me? To Helen Hayes and to Douglas Fairbanks Jr. I ran to Sardi's. I told them that I was a friend of hers.
Yeah.
And they didn't need to sit me at her table, but sit me next to her.
Right.
And I sat at the table just observing her.
Mm.
And then when Carol Channing did her last revival of Hello, Dolly, a friend of mine called me up and said, you should do a full show about her.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was, you know, audiences are not going to come to see an impersonator do a show about Carol Channing. And he said, well, if you'll know whether they'll come or not once you do it.
Right.
So I started putting the show together. And as fate would have it, to make a long story a little shorter,
mm-hmm.
I got the opportunity to perform my show for Carol Channing before I opened the show.
Wow.
And she loved it. She gave me her endorsement. She told me to take the gauntlet and run with it. As a result
yeah.
of that show that I did at Don't Tell Mama in New York,
yeah.
one night, like in the movies, there was a producer in the audience, and I got
wow.
cast to do my show at Trump's Taj Mahal in
wow.
Atlantic City.
Wow.
And I went to Atlantic City, and I headlined there in two long-running shows.
Cool.
And then over the years, Carol and I, she was very much aware of what I was doing. I didn't make a move that she wasn't aware of, because I never wanted her to feel that I was exploiting her.
Oh.
Going back to that first night that I performed for her, I went in with the attitude that if she didn't like what I was doing, I would never do it again.
Oh, nice.
Because I never wanted her to feel that I was hurting
right.
her or exploiting her or doing anything along those lines.
How many people do that, right? God.
Well, that's true. That's true.
No, just
hey,
go
Richard,
ahead and imitate
I got a question. Hey, Richard.
Yes, yes.
How did you reach out to Carol Channing to let her know that you were doing the show? How did that come about?
Well, it was an interesting thing. What was happening was the New York City Gay Men's Chorus was going to be celebrating the music of Jerry Herman. Mm. And Carol Channing was going to be performing that night. Mm. And this was all happening around the time that I was putting the show together. So I didn't actually reach out to Carol. I really wanted to be in that concert. I wrote to them. We didn't have computers at that time. So I wrote, I made phone calls, and everything landed on deaf ears. Mm. And then I find out a friend of mine calls me up, and Lila Forge, may you rest in peace, and Lee said, what are you doing Sunday night, the night of the concert? Mm. And I said, I'm going to be sitting at home watching television. He said, I'm playing the after party.
Oh.
Why don't you come to the after party as Carol, and I'll get you up to perform for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the after party was at a place called the Regents in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the Regents. I walk in, and as soon as I walk in, the whole place is going crazy because there I am dressed as Carol.
Nice.
There are pictures. I can send you pictures of the two of us from that night.
Nice.
But I walk in, and the first thing Carol says to me is, where did you learn to do this? And I said, I did it at Bennington College in Vermont. You do know where that is, Carol. It's the lower left-hand corner part of the map, the part of the state that's always purple, which was her material from her act. And she started asking me questions. And as she's asking me these questions, I'm answering as her, as she had told these stories. And she said that night that I scared the hell out of her because she could not get over the research that I had put into this.
Oh,
and then there are all these people that are waiting to see her. I did not want to monopolize her evening. And I said to her, before you leave to eat this evening, I would like to do a song for you.
Mm.
She said, you would like to do a song for me? And I said, well, actually, I'd like to do my whole show, but I'm sure you're not going to make the time for that. And she said, yes, we are. You tell me when and where. I said, upstairs in 10 minutes. And she stands up and she tells the entire room, I've never thought I would say these words, but in 10 minutes we're going to see Carol Channing. And she was like the Pied Piper. She led the audience. They came upstairs. She sat on a stool right in front of me. I did the show for her.
Wow.
And I told her that I only wanted to do it with her endorsement.
Nice.
And she said, take the gauntlet and run with it.
Were you nervous? Were you nervous, Richard?
I was nervous when I first walked into the room.
Mm.
Because when I first walked into the room, I thought, oh, my God, they're going to call the police. They're going to throw me out. Because I was really essentially crashing this party.
Right,
I didn't know what was going to happen. But once I realized that she was on my side and she was enjoying what I was doing, I felt comfortable with that.
Right.
So, again, I ended up opening the show and over the course of this next few years, she went through – at the end of her previous marriage, she was going through a nasty divorce and everything, and she disappeared for a while. She went into her own seclusion. She wrote her memoirs, and her first appearance was in Jamestown, New York, where Lucy Ball is from, for Lucy Desi Days. And she... they showed the episode that introduced me to Carol, and then she came out and did a Q&A with the audience. And here I am in Jamestown, New York. The entire thing started with me, with Carol Channing and Lucille Ball.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote a letter to her. And in that letter, I stated that I would never make fun of her,
mm-hmm.
that her personal life was always off the record for me, that I would never do anything to embarrass her or that would not put her in a shining light. And I gave her the letter and told her to read it on the plane ride on the way back to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when she did her next appearance in New York, by this point she's married to her fourth husband, Harry Collegian. And when Harry met me, he said, oh my God, he says, I've heard so much about you and everything. And Harry was really the catalyst because Harry and I became very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when Carol got her star on the Palm Springs Walk of Fame,
mm-hmm.
I was invited to come to their home and stay with her. I was with her the day that she got the star.
Nice.
There's a documentary on Carol called Carol Channing Larger Than Life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the movie, you know, and here it is, you know, full circle that we became. She used to call me on the phone all the time. We
nice.
Became very, very close friends.
Nice.
And
nice.
It all stemmed from this kid who was a huge fan of hers.
Yeah, nice. There you go. You know, dreams come true, you know.
And it's all, you know, I tell everybody, read the book, The Magic of Believing, because it's
right.
true.
Right, right. Yep, absolutely. So now, I know you said you haven't done it in about 9 years. Do you miss it at all?
I don't.
Really?
I don't. I am so focused on, you know, one of the things, I have a poster here over my desk. And Carol wrote it, and she said to my loving and devoted friend, Richard, you are a real musical comedy star. No need for you to hide behind me. You're fabulous as me. I love you. But let the world know who you are, Carol Elaine Channing.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
And, and so for 20 years, that was the persona. That was how people knew me. It opened a lot of doors for me.
Right.
But I am loving being Richard Skipper, and Richard Skipper is a character too.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I've created this character, and so I'm out there doing what I do. In addition to doing this show, I am starting a new book club. I live in Piermont, New York, which is just below Nyack. Carol Channing actually used to live up here in this area.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I am starting a book club. We are launching, it would have been next Sunday, but the Oscars are next Sunday.
Right.
So we're launching it on Monday night. It's at Bunbury's Coffee Shop in Piermont.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be called, and wait till you hear this title, Positive Full Mooning. And we are getting together on the full moon
uh-huh.
of every month, and we're starting with The Magic of Believing. That's our first book.
Right.
And once a month, we're getting together to discuss another positive book and how we can keep this positivity going in all of our lives.
Richard, I'm sorry, who wrote Magic of Believing again?
Claude M. Bristol.
Claude M. Bristol. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I wanted to know.
Yeah. But the thing is that none of us are responsible for what's going on in the world. We are not responsible for what the President of the United States is doing, regardless of what side you're on politically. We're not responsible for what our senators are doing on
mm-hmm.
either side of the fence. But what we all are responsible for how we respond to it.
Right.
That's where we have to take the control.
Right.
We have to keep that light burning so intensely within each of us that no one's able to put that light out.
Right.
That's my goal. That's my mission. That's the message that I want to get across to people.
Right, right. So now you have what's coming up on the 8th, February 8th, I'm sorry.
February 8th, I will be, which is just a few days before my 59th birthday. February 8th, I will be at Green Room 42.
Mm-hmm.
Which is at 42nd Street and 10th Avenue in New York,
mm-hmm.
At a beautiful club called Green Room 42, celebrating, I'm doing this show, Richard Skipper, The Magic of Believing. I debuted the show this past August, August 5th,
mm-hmm.
which was 40 years to the day that I came to New York.
Nice.
And Linda Emile Burns, who is the president of the American Popular Song Society, asked me if I would come in and perform for their – they meet once a month. It's a wonderful organization. It used to be called the New York Sheet Music Society.
Mm-hmm.
And they their goal originally was to preserve sheet music. And unfortunately, people don't collect sheet music anymore.
No.
There used to be a place in New York called The Colony.
Oh, my favorite store. Oh, when they took it down, I almost died. I went over.
Oh, we all did.
I literally, Richard, took a trip over to go over there. And so I'm like, am I lost?
where is it? I couldn't believe what was there. I couldn't. I love Colony Records. Love Colony
and
Records.
So many places that we love. Yeah. I mean, I used to love the Coliseum Bookstore that was on 57th Street, and the Regency Movie Theater, which was a revival house, the Thalia on the Upper West Side, all of these great, the Five Oaks that I used to go to on Grove Street. So many places that were part of my life when I first came to New York are no longer there.
I know.
And everything is changing. I mean, do we really need another Starbucks? Do we need another CVS?
Yeah.
Do we need...
I'm kidding. No.
No, but the thing is these mom and pop stores and these, I mean, the fact that people don't read books the way that they used to read books.
Right.
I still love the feeling of having a book in my hand.
Right.
I love going into a musty bookstore and the smell and the feel of being in a store like that. You know, these places are special.
Right.
And they are just disappearing from our... What are we leaving for the next generation?
Nothing. Nothing. They've taken everything away from us. But speaking of books, are you going to do a book about your show, The Magic of Believing?
Well, in the back of my mind, there is the idea that someday I want to do a book on this.
You should. I mean, it's a great... Your life story is amazing.
Well,
I mean,
thank
my
you.
God. Who wouldn't read that? I would. I would read it.
I do want to let your readers, I love to do lectures. I love to do talks. I've got a whole show built around the book. But I can go, you can give me any topic, and I can do an hour based on that topic, as you can possibly tell right now.
I think Richard needs his own radio show. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I was getting there. I think, Mr. Skipper, are you have plans for that in the future?
I'm trying to launch my own podcast.
Good question, John. Sorry.
Thank you both for that. I'm hoping to, it's one of my goals for this year. One of my intentions is to launch my own podcast. And I've already reached out to someone who was very much a part of my childhood was, and I'm going to throw a name out there, and someone suggested her the other day, and I thought, and I actually reached out to her. I'm waiting for a response to be my first guest, and I will take off from there, Rona Barrett.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
I hope to get her.
Oh, I'd love to have her on here.
Because she was really at the very end, the business was changing a lot when
right,
I came to New York in 1979.
But she was at the core of it all.
She was at the core of it all. But in 1979, when I came to New York, cable didn't exist.
Nope.
I mean, I was in New York for, I think, 2 years when the Fox Network launched.
Mm.
And these other cable stations are coming along.
Right.
And I mean, it's great that we've got all these channels, but if either of you are like me, there are some nights that I'm awake and I flip from channel to channel to channel, and there's nothing on.
Who are you telling? I know.
And
nothing,
think about
nothing,
this for
nothing,
just
nothing,
a moment.
Nothing that we want to watch is on, put it that
That's
way.
That's right, but think about this for just a moment. There was a time when there were live dramas on television,
mm-hmm.
and there are so many great artists out there that are not working, and there are no opportunities for them, and yet those opportunities are right there in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate thing is that producers and the people that are in charge are afraid to take a chance on the unknown.
Right.
And
I have to agree with you.
It's take chances. I mean, yeah. I would love, I was having dinner with a friend of mine last night, and she said, "You are the American Graham Norton." And I said, "I love that." I couldn't think of a better compliment because I'm a huge Graham Norton fan. But I would love to do my own talk show here in New York and put my own spin on it. I want to make it something that's unique to me.
It'll be great. I can't wait to hear it. You got to tell me when it's coming on.
Well, you know, I will keep you posted.
And if you need any help, you know, like I said to you, we're here to help you.
Well, I appreciate that, then. Thank you
so
much.
No problem. And don't you also are doing, promotions, too? Are you PR guy?
I do promotions.
What?
I have about, Five clients. As a matter of fact, you and I have spoken, if I can give a little plug. Ann Kittredge, who is a phenomenal singer here in New York, is going to be doing your show. I also am one of my clients, and this will be a name from your past, is Julie Budd.
Oh,
so we'll get Julie Budd on your show as well.
Sure,
I mean, So I, you know, it started several years ago. I got a phone call from Lucy Arnaz, believe it or not. And Lucy Arnaz, and here we go, going back to Lucy. But Lucy Arnaz was going to be at the Carlisle in New York, and she called me up and said, would you do my press for me? And I said, Lucy, I don't know the first thing about doing press.
Right.
And she says, but you know everybody. And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do it. If you're happy about what I'm doing, you can pay me whatever you want to pay me. I'm not putting a price tag on what I do. And tell the world.
Right.
And thank God she was very happy with what I did. And that was the beginning. That's how I all started.
Hey, by any chance, do you know Michael Stern?
I do know Michael Stern.
Oh, he was a guest on our show. Love, Michael. Love Michael. Remember Michael, John? He was
I certainly do.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael
was
wonderful. Wonderful guy. So, I mean, if anybody wanted to use you for their services, how would they reach out to you for you to represent them?
Well, I have a website, richardskipper.com. I'm very accessible. They can email me, richard at richardskipper.com. I'm on Facebook. You know, I'm constantly shaking things up with Facebook. The way that I use Facebook, for anyone out there that's listening, is I want the interactive experience. I will tell you something. When I first got on Facebook, and Facebook to me is a blessing and a curse. When I first got on Facebook, and I was one of those reluctant people saying, oh, I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to be a part of this. And then all of a sudden, you start getting all these friends and friend requests and everything. And you think, oh, my God, all these people want to be my friend.
Right.
Wrong. A lot of them want to be your friend because of the connections you have, the people you know. And there are a lot of people out there on Facebook who are lurkers, who I never interact with. But, you know, I go through, and this is going to sound cruel, and I apologize. But when I go through, like, I look at the friend's birthdays list. And when I go to click on a name, there are certain people that I do have a real connection with. Those people are safe. But if it's someone that I have not interacted with over the past 6 months, I unfriend them. And I do that because I'm getting – right now I'm at 4,999. I am constantly adding the ebb and flow. I want an interactive experience with the people that I am on social media with. I truly want that give and take. And it's important for me that I have that. And if I don't have that – someone's just taking up space.
Well, I sent
Michael a friend request, and I hope Michael friends me because I sent him a request. And I think you're up to like 400, and you were up to like 4,996 people at that time. So.
Michael. He posts a lot of good stuff. I like what he posts. I mean, I do the same thing in some way. With the Facebook, I mean, believe it or not, our show is pretty much geared on Facebook. We get all our listeners from Facebook, and we're reaching. We're going to be spanning out to YouTube and whatnot very soon. But I use it as a tool myself, and I've met some wonderful people. I have to tell you, they have been so wonderful to me in support of the show and helping us along here. I can't even tell you. They've reached out to me to say they want to help us, which is fantastic. And they're all in the industry, and they're wonderful people. And I have a lot of friends through the industry now, and I would never exploit any of them. And we have an interactive connection. And any guest that we've had on here and anyone I do friend, we are friends. I mean, right, John? I mean, anybody we've had on the show, they've always been wonderful. And we've remained friends with, and everybody always knows they're welcome back here.
We support them.
Well, that's the whole thing.
And there's no invitation required here.
It's all about required.
Right, and there's no invitation required. If somebody wants to be on the show, you reach out, you know, just reach out. I mean, that's what we're here for. We want to talk to you. We want your fans to talk to you. We call it Applause Radio Show because we want you to get that applause you deserve, especially you guys from the past. We want to make you relevant again because we need you. We need you. So please.
Absolutely.
If you want to be on this show, you contact John or myself anytime. We'd love to have you on. But, I mean, Richard, you've been wonderful. You know that. I mean, I don't have to say anything.
Well, thank you. I mean, I know that, you know, our time is running out. See, I told you you wouldn't have to worry about that.
I do want to
let people know that, you know, for me, it's all about sending a positive message out
me
in today's
too.
World
me
of negativity.
Too.
So if anyone's interested, I am available to come and speak to your group, your Hadassah meetings, your youth groups, anything. You know, just find me on Facebook, write to me, call me, get me out there, and let's celebrate each other. To me, that's why I came up with the name Richard Skipper Celebrates.
Right.
Richard Skipper celebrates everybody, everything.
Right.
That's what we have to do.
And I feel it. I feel it. That's why I said I fell in love with you the first 15 seconds I talked to you. Because in a way, we're so much alike, our stories, our background and everything. But it's amazing to me. And I hope 2-8, is that a weekend? 2-8? I think it is, right?
It's next Saturday.
Right.
You know, it's hard to believe.
I'm hoping I can make it because I'd love to go and love to meet you in person.
If you are there, please say hello.
Of course.
I mean, just to let you to know about the American Popular Song Society, they meet on the second Saturday of every month.
Oh.
And they have a whole, I mean, the season goes from October until June is the last one. And if you become a member, it's $50 for the entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you carte blanche to see all of the programs.
Nice.
Or it's $15 if you just come individually to see a show. And I have a wonderful entertainer who's opening for me. Her name is Ruby Rakos.
Mm-hmm.
And I became familiar with Ruby several years ago when she was playing Judy Garland in Chasing Rainbows at the Goodspeed Opera House.
Wow.
And then they recently did a revised version of that show at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to get the show to Broadway. But time is of the essence because Ruby plays the young Judy Garland. It's about Judy Garland's life leading up to getting cast in The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And it is an amazing show, and I hope that it makes it to Broadway. But she's opening for me next Saturday.
It sounds like an amazing story.
Yeah. It's an amazing story.
Yeah. I can only imagine. But, Richard, is there anything else you want to share with the folks out there where they can get in touch with you? So I know.
Yes, and I am here. I'm here for you. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Pinterest. I'm on Tumblr. I'm out there. I'm ubiquitous. I'm everywhere.
Well, John, I don't know if you have anything more for Richard, but I'd like to say everybody, including yourself, Richard, to have a wonderful Sunday, and thank you. John, anything to add?
No, I'm just happy he was able to come on today. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank
lovely.
You so much.
Thank
I really,
you.
It means a lot to me.
No, thank you. Well, Richard, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, and if anybody wants to catch Richard before reaching out to him or while you're already reached out to him socially, you catch him on February 8th at the Green Room 42 in the city, where he's doing his new show with The Magic of Believing. And let's join Richard as Richard Skipper celebrates. I mean, live life, man. Be happy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, that's all you got to be. Just then everything will be fine, right?
That's it.
All
absolutely.
Right.
Thank
Richard
you so
Skipper,
much,
thank
Richard.
Thank you so
thank
much
you so
for
much.
Joining
thank you
us.
Both. Thank you
and
both for having me on today.
We'll talk soon, okay?
You too.
All right, honey. Take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
Bye, Richard.
Bye. Oh, boy. What a guy, huh? What a story,
yeah,
right,
great
guy?
Show.
Oh, what
hey,
a story.
Hey, give a shout-out one more time to our sponsors, Joanne, that we got to leave.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want to thank the Hyde Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Moments Video in Kintnerville, Pennsylvania, and KWV Wines, of course. I want to thank. Did I say it right? Kintnerville? Kintnerville.
Well,
Kintnerville, Pennsylvania.
Precious Memory Photo Video.
I'm so sorry. We got to write that down.
It's kind of like a Bigfoot bloodbath.
I know. I get so caught up. My mind is thinking more than I'm talking. I'm sorry.
All right, everybody.
And thank you, Richard Skipper. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, John. Thank you. I love you as always. And we'll see you guys Wednesday. Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
Night.
Enjoy
good
the Super Bowl.
Goodbye.
Take care. Bye-bye.